on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Thursday, October 17th, 2024 edition. And we are here as usual to help you become a better investor, take that next step in your journey of your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues each and every weekday by answering your investment questions and giving you topics that are important to consider in your overall decision-making process and help set the right frame of mind so that you are making consistent decisions with your money, right? Not getting talked into bear porn. I love to use that term because there's so much of it out there, you know, the world's going to come to an end type of thing. And there's also, you know, the opposite side, which is this particular investment is all you need and it's going to make you rich. Okay. The world, the vast majority of reality is somewhere in the middle. Okay. And so our job is to help you understand that gray area because that's where the world is. This isn't about a hyperbole one way or the other. Perma bulls, perma bears, whatever you typically see on social media, even sometimes in media, right? With crazy headlines, all of that is a lot of noise for the most part. And there's not a lot of true facts. I guess that's a redundancy there, but true topics that are discussed that matter, at least for most people. They're probably not following the right people on social media. They're not really parsing out the true reality when they're seeing headlines. And that's what we do. That's what we have to do as investors, right? This is just an extension of what I do each and every day, which is, you know, allocate money for clients in order to make good risk-adjusted returns. And in order to do that, you have to be educated about various sectors, asset classes, et cetera. And that's what we strive to do every single day. And we bring those lessons that we learn that we're applying to portfolios on a daily basis to this show. So I encourage you to call at 888-99-CHART and ask your question. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But first, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hi, guys. Love the show. I was just calling up about Union Pacific Corp, UMP, trying to find out if it's worth buying. I own a small position. I just wanted to hear what you guys think. Thank you.
All right. Looking at Union Pacific, UNP is the symbol. And this is one of the largest railroad companies in the country. It's actually the largest public railroad in North America. 30,000 miles of track, mainly in the western two-thirds of the United States. So heavily reliant on getting imports from abroad, coming into the western ports, obviously mainly from China, and importing those to the rest of the country. Okay. And you're talking about hauling coal, industrial products, agricultural goods, chemicals, fertilizer, automotive goods, you know, cars, things like that. And so this is a very, very good railroad, really, to own. Return on invested capital is 14%, which is a very solid long-term return. Return on equity is 44%, is longer-term average. Is a bit lower, but still it is a very profitable business. Good balance sheet, cash flow of nearly $5 billion in the trailing 12 months. And that is down from the high back in 2021 when there were so many goods being moved and demand for goods was very, very high in the midst of the pandemic. That's cooled off a little bit, but you know, overall, they're still making good, consistent, solid free cash flow. They're paying a nice dividend that's certainly sustainable, and they're buying back shares. Now, as of late, they've slowed down the buying back shares, and this stock has kind of gone sideways since late 2021. Earnings went from Earnings went from $11.35 in 2022, from $10 in 2021 to $10.44 last year, and supposed to make $11.11 this year. So you can see why it's kind of leveled out, is growth slowed. But to me, this is all pretty healthy consolidation. And I think that this is something you will want to own over the long term. Now, near term, I still think you could see some more consolidation. So it might not be an outperformer in the near term. But if you're looking at a good quality business to own in the transportation industry that has good long-term tailwinds, I think Union Pacific is certainly up there. So I'm going to give Union Pacific a thumbs up, even though I don't think it's a screaming buy at the moment. I just love it for a kind of a long-term hold. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and time permitting, we are going to hit on them all. One is our main focus point, and that is, did Uber just win big from Tesla's robo-taxi reveal? Tesla's recent CyberCab launch sent some ripples through the market, mainly in the stock, down 8%, but Uber emerged a bit of a winner with the stock up on this news. And so we'll talk a bit about that reveal and what that might mean for the automated vehicle industry. In addition, we have other topics on the docket. Number one is I want to hit on a more positive note. As we head into an election that's very contentious, I want to talk about the U.S. economy. And it's something, as I said at the top of the show, a lot of doom and gloomers out there, a lot of bear porn. A lot that everyone nitpicking about the economy. And there's always things to hit on that can be improved. But what's overlooked is really the resilience and dynamism of the U.S. economy. So I want to talk a bit about that because it's important to understand and keep top of mind in context to all of those headlines and that bear porn you see out there all the time. Also, I want to touch on gold. Gold continues to power higher. And what does that mean for consumer sentiment and what kind of relationship gold has to other metrics that are out there in the marketplace? So we'll look at that story as well, hopefully time permitting. We also have voice bank questions. One is on Powell Industries and the other is if Trump wins and what happens to the market. We also have questions that came in via the comment section over on our YouTube channel as well. And as always, I welcome your finance and investment questions live during the 4 to 5 Pacific time hour. Or if you're listening after hours, that's fine too. You can call and leave your question and we'll answer it on a future show. Now we're going to a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk with James from New York asking about DJT.
InvestTalk is made better when listeners add their voices.
This is Nick from Seattle.
Hey, this is Steve out of Charleston, South Carolina.
Could you comment on Barrick Gold, G-O-L-D?
And Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are always ready to provide unbiased answers.
Be patient. Don't rush into anything. Understand what you own.
I would probably trim here, but I don't see any reason why you'd want to sell out of it.
Voice bank calls are very important. But so are the spontaneous questions that come in during the InvestTalk live stream.
Let's pivot over to a live call. We love those.
Looks like we got our first live call. I love live calls.
If you've never called, what are you waiting for?
Let's go take another live call.
Tell your friends, live a little, live a little.
Looks like we got a live call.
Call InvestTalk weekdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific time.
That makes sense?
Yeah, it sure does. I appreciate the advice.
888-99-CHART. Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. Chart.
Now let's go grab a live call right now from James in New York looking at DJT.
Yeah, I'm looking at DJT and just purely because I don't think it's a good company. I'm not looking at the fundamentals. I'm really just thinking about a play on the momentum of this election and the momentum that Donald Trump seems to be getting. Do you think this could be a near-term pop for this company?
Yeah, I absolutely think it is just a trade if you think that Trump will win. Now, part of that's been priced in, right? It's moved from, was it $10 about a month ago, now to $29.90 today. So it's already moved substantially. Could it continue to move more and move, gap higher on a Trump win? Sure. But that would absolutely 100% be a pop to sell. But then you also have the risk that, I still think this is a 50-50 election. I really don't have a play, even though the market's pricing in Trump winning. So right now, that's still, a slight favorite as opposed to an overwhelming favorite by any metric. Okay. Even if you say it's at best 60-40 in Trump's favor, I think that's the best case you can make. That's still, a slight favorite. As a trade, sure, if you have high confidence that Trump will win, but you absolutely sell it on that news of him winning. Thanks for the call. Sounds like he's in New York City. All right. Thanks for the call, James. Let's go look at the market today. And it was a decidedly positive day. It was a mixed day. I forgot the market. I was on calls all day. The market did fade kind of near the end of the day. Closed pretty much flat. S&P was down 1 point. Dow was up 161 points. NASDAQ was up 6.5 points. And yeah, kind of a mixed bag. Nothing really moved dramatically as a kind of a style factor, growth versus value, small, etc. It was all around the flat line. So really a boring day, although gold did continue to power to a new all-time high. That continues to do very, very well. There were some big movers. Travelers was up 9% on the day. Taiwan Semiconductor up nearly 10%. Snap-on Tools, that was up nearly 10% as well. You had, what were the other ones? Big winners. I think those are the main ones. Let's see. Lucid was down 18%. Look at the big losers here. That was Centene in the healthcare space. That was down nearly 10%. Molina Health down a 12%. Those were really the big losers on the day. And look at the most active names. Lucid was kind of the main one. NVIDIA was roughly flat. So, kind of a boring day overall. Not much really to talk about except for the consumer spending number did come in a bit better than expected. And you did see rates rise on this news. So is that a harbinger of a more hawkish Fed and, the consumer holding in there, staying in there? The jobs number for last month was pretty good. A lot of evidence has started to stack up that, maybe the Fed does not need to be very aggressive in its rate cutting cycle. Maybe they start to skip meetings, right? Maybe they only do 25 basis points at the next meeting in November, and then they wait until the new year to cut rates. That's certainly a possibility as well. So that's what the market was today. Good consumer numbers, but overall a flat and very mixed bag for equities. Now, hope you've been telling your friends that our podcast is in video form over on our YouTube channel. And we have questions submitted via the comment section. And let's get to one now. So The Real Muskie says, hi, Justin and Luke. Any thoughts on Skyworks? I might be a bit biased since the stock has significant size in my portfolio. Now, what recently caught my attention is relatively high short interest and some negative articles referring to the risk of future growth. Yeah, there are risks to Skyworks. Mainly, it has to do with their high concentration to Apple. But overall, their business is very strong. Their margins are still very good. It's about a mid-teens multiple based on forward-looking earnings. And I think that they are going to have good opportunity to expand their margins because it's 5G and for whatever else everyone else out there is, they make integrated circuits, chips for mobile phones, mainly when it comes to wireless signal. Think of the antenna that is used to connect to the wireless towers in your phone. And it's probably they're the main player there. And they have a long history of doing that well and having consistency. And obviously, that's very important to a phone. It needs to have that consistent connectivity. And if any of those chips don't work properly, then the whole phone is just not usable. And so Skyworks has, a lock, but pretty good advantage in that space. And so as 5G is rolled out, more higher percentage of the chips in the phone are going to be the type that Skyworks makes. So we like that. I do think the iPhone upgrade cycle, however, is probably not this cycle. I think it's actually going to be for next year. So we think it'll probably accelerate into the iPhone event next fall. Thanks for the call. Now we're moving to a break. Still to come, this podcast and radio show on AM 1220. I will tackle more of your voice bank calls and get to the main focus point. So stay with me, but give us a call at 888-99-CHIP.
It's official. We've now crossed over the 59 million download mark. Invest Talk. Call anytime. 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus point is about the recent robo-taxi reveal from Tesla and how it really disappointed and the market traded down, or the Tesla traded down, about 8% on the news. And it's really just been chopping sideways ever since. And that is certainly a bearish sign near term for the name. But is that if one company is not looked fondly upon by investors as they had been, usually the money flows elsewhere. And that's what's happened since this news. Now, this happened, last Thursday? And what Elon Musk talked about in this event was what he called unsupervised full self-driving, which is different than the supervised full self-driving that is currently on Tesla models. Now, most people don't know that. They think the full self-driving just means that. They don't mean that. They don't realize that it has to be supervised at all times. But what he promised, which he did promise a number of years ago, was that the Cybercab would cost less than $30,000. Remember, I think it was in 2019 when he said they would have millions of Cybercabs on the road by 2020. And obviously that didn't happen. And this time he's saying that production will happen sometime by the end of 2025. Okay. And some banks liked what they heard, but most others thought it was underwhelming, mainly because there were not a whole lot of specifics about regulatory clearance. This has to happen state by state. Okay. Meaning if you want to have a automated vehicle operating, you have to go through the state regulators. And they didn't talk at all about that. There weren't a lot of specifics about how they were going to get approved, what process they were in getting approved for something like this. And ultimately, I think that's what the market paid attention to. Because you can say a lot of things very easily. We know Elon throughout the years has said a lot. And some things come to fruition and the vast majority of things don't. And you know, he is a good marketer. So what does he do? He doesn't allow people to focus on those things that didn't come to fruition. He tends to just focus on the next thing and kind of that next promise. And once again, you don't know how real it is or not, but the market is not seeing this as very real. And another sign of that is that Uber and Lyft shares rose on this news. And, you know, for Uber and Lyft, the biggest competitive advantage they have is the network of drivers they have on their platform. And their biggest risk is that the automated vehicle industry will usurp that network of drivers and make them obsolete. Okay. And so this is certainly an important area to follow if you're investing in like an Uber or Lyft or even a Tesla, right? And Uber has experimented before with automated vehicles in Arizona, but they had a fatality from a pedestrian in 2018, and they abandoned it, and they switched strategies. They've partnered up with Alphabet's Waymo and GM Cruise, and allows them to still have some exposure there, but not put all this CapEx into developing that technology, allows those companies to do a lot of that work. Now, nearly a decade ago, many industry insiders were saying or predicting that autonomous vehicles would go mainstream, but regulatory tape and safety concerns continue to prevent that from coming to fruition. And the big question is, will you ever get over the hump here? I don't think so. And there's a lot of issues here. I was in San Francisco recently, and I was leaving a large event, and there were Waymos everywhere, and the Waymos blocked everything. And it came a nightmare to get out of this this event. And it was one of the worst, you know, transportation situations I personally have ever been in. And it was all caused by dozens and dozens and dozens of Waymos just blocking roads. And so, you know, how tolerant will citizens be of those type of things? And there's obviously a lot of kinks that need to be worked out. And so the reality here is that autonomous vehicles are likely still many years away, despite what Elon says. And the most important factor for long-term success for Uber is whether they can navigate that transition successfully. But that's more of a long-term risk to follow and to be aware of. But overall, I think Uber and Lyft are fine for now. And it's a good example of why in the technology world, how innovation can certainly be a huge risk and put you out of business very quickly if you fall behind. This is Invest Talk, now with 59 million downloads, thanks to you and your friends. So hang on, our work continues after this break.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin. This is Jennifer calling from San Francisco, and I have a question about Powell Industries, ticker symbol POWL. It's run up significantly this year. I have a small percentage, I've owned it for a while, and I actually started taking some profits about a month ago, thinking that it had to be kind of near the top, but it just keeps going up. So not sure what to do at this point, if I should maybe sell off a little bit more. I'm sure it's going to kind of revert to the norm at some point, but I hate to keep selling something that keeps going up so much. Let me know your thoughts. Thank you. Bye.
Well, you've already sold some. You never sell the perfect time. And I would just hold it. You know, this isn't a good area of the economy. It manufactures power substation packages, switching gears, circuit breakers, generators. This is all, we had to talk about this internally recently. And we're, you know, we already own some, but, you know, we're looking for more ways to gain exposure. We think there's a secularly strong demand for all types of electrification, both upgrading our current electric grid as well as electrification for charging EVs, for data center power needs, et cetera. And all of this is going to take a lot of things that Powell Industry sells. And so that's why their business is booming. Now, are they going to get the issue is not whether they're going to continue to be very profitable. I think they will be. But are they going to really make $11.78 this year and $12.35 next year? If they are, $275 per share, growing at this level is still relatively cheap. But if they're going to have reversion to the mean back to, you know, 2020 levels of $1.38, obviously it's extremely overvalued. But I think the reality is somewhere in between. But I would just hold it until you get some sort of technical break. And obviously you're not, you know, it was down today, but that's just because it's a bit overbought in the near term. So I would just continue to hold it. I would have an out, probably the 200-day moving average is probably where I would have my out. Right now it's down to 158. So I think you still have some ways to go. You've already trimmed it a bit. You've already taken some profits off the table. I would just ride it until there's some sort of technical weakness, and I'm not seeing anything on the horizon right now. Thanks for the call. Now, let's touch a bit on something positive, which is the American economy. We just had consumer spending numbers that came out, and they were relatively robust. Now, the first thing you have to understand about the domestic economy is that consumer balance sheets are extremely strong. They're one of the strongest positions that have been in decades. And a lot of this has to do with, decade plus of low interest rates, where people were able to pay down, borrow money, pay down any loans, refinance any loans that they had at very low rates. And that allows them to pay down the principal. And then you have their underlying assets rise. Obviously, homes is the main one. And so the value of the equity in people's homes is pretty high. And then you have equities rallying. And so 401ks and retirement accounts, those are up as well. And so if you look at the consumer balance sheet, it is strong. And that's what you have to understand. And then number two is the broader economic performance of the economy is actually pretty good, even though we have a very poisonous political environment today and an election coming up. The broader economy over the past decade plus under both Biden, under Trump, it's actually been good. I know it may not seem like it, but it is, especially if you look at the diversity of our economy. You know, there are a lot of countries out there that are very reliant on a small slice of their economy to drive economic growth and stability. But for us, with the United States, it's fairly broad-based. You know, we have a strong consumer sector. We have, a technology sector that's very strong. We are energy independent. You know, we have strong and healthy companies in almost every sector. You know, right, our finance sector is very strong with Wall Street. And so all of this leads into dynamism. I know it doesn't seem like it, right? Republicans, Democrats have never mistrusted each other or disagreed more. And so there's a gloomy backdrop when it comes to the political situation. But when it comes to the economy, it's the opposite. In 1990, the U.S. accounted for 2/5, so 40% of GDP of the G7, the seven largest countries. Today, it's 50%. And the output per person is about 30% higher than in Western Europe, Canada, and 60% higher than in Japan. Even America's poorest state, Mississippi, earns more than those on average than Brits, Canadians, and Germans. And we're also gaining on China as well. In 2021, China was 3/4 of our GDP, the size of their economy. Now it's 2/3. Okay, so we're starting to outperform China as well. And so, like I said, we have a lot of natural resources. Talked about oil, but other types of resources as well. Mines all across the country, from copper to gold, etc. And the capital markets mean that companies can go and raise capital and spread their idea across 49 other states and the rest of the world. And while our regulatory environment has issues, it's fairly light touch. It means that we can move ideas along. And despite the pandemic, we've still grown 10% since 2020. And that's 3 times the average pace of the rest of the G7. We have a dynamic private sector that brings in immigrants, obviously some illegal, but a lot legal as well. Those that do have ideas abroad, they come here to start businesses and raise capital. And all of this brings dynamism to our economy. Amazon alone spent more on R&D than all of the British businesses combined. The big seven tech companies, they're worth more than the entire stock markets of Britain, Canada, Germany, and Japan combined. And so, yes, we have political problems. But understand, this is one of my favorite sayings from my grandfather. He would always say, America's not going away. And it isn't. No matter who wins the election, America will not go away. It will not be the end of our democracy. It will not be the end of the country. Because simply, our institutions are too strong and produce too good of outcomes for them to be completely abandoned and switched elsewhere. Yes, we have a lot of debt. Yes, we have a lot to solve. But we also have a lot going for us as well. And so remember that when you see headlines, doom and gloom headlines, especially when you're, you know, if the other side wins and you think, oh, the world's going to go to hell in a handbasket. No, that's not how this works. Okay. The institutions, countries, it takes a long time for things to go bad. Are we on the wrong trajectory? Maybe. But we're coming from a very strong position in general. And so I wanted to touch on that because it's so vitally important to not get caught up in the hype of the election. Now, this is Invest Talk. Now, let's swing back to the 24/7 voice bank for a question that came in earlier on 888-99 chart.
Hey, Invest Talk, Bill from Philadelphia here. Regarding yesterday's episode, Justin said that the market is pricing in, I guess, a Trump win. He still thinks it's 50-50, but as he said, the market seems to be pricing that as a Trump win. And I want to let you know like what kind of indicators there are that are saying that. But it seems like the market's been going up this whole year. I'm not political in any way, but just wanted to kind of get facts about that and get opinions and why he thinks that. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, that's very simple. You know, it's from a sector perspective. And you look at DJT, right? We had a caller earlier about DJT, and that's been rallying. Obviously, if Trump wins, that would probably be good for that stock in general, right? From a regulatory standpoint, from business, et cetera. So that's one factor that I'm seeing. Another is the strength in financials and industrials. So obviously, industrials with lighter regulation, financials with less regulatory requirements for capital cushions, for example, it's what he's talked about. And so financials would do a bit better under Trump, not having to set aside so much capital for loans. And so, it's just the sector leadership that you're seeing in markets. Once again, this is not a guarantee. This is not saying this is the market's pricing in 100% that Trump will win. But when the odds go from roughly 50-50, which they were a couple of weeks ago, now they're closer to 55-45, the market starts to price that incremental odds in. And you've seen some movement there. Once again, I still think it's coin flip. I could easily see both sides winning if Kamala gets in. That trade's going to unwind rather quickly. And so it puts a bit more risk on where the market is going to go around the election. Because if the market sees it as 50-50, then either outcome doesn't matter much, right? It might move a little bit in different sectors, et cetera, after that. But in this instance, it could be a buy the rumor, sell the news type of event as well. So, that's what I'm seeing in markets. That could change. We still have, a few weeks till the election. And so that trade can certainly unwind if those odds kind of come back to even. There's another question from our Invest Talk channel. Jaylee Know the Future says, I would like your analysis and opinion on Nutrient, NTR. I was thinking about entering a small position in this company for 2 to 3 year time horizon. Now, this is in the ag space, and it has been in a strong downtrend. And that's my worry here. Really, since you started the Ukraine war, when there was worries about natural gas prices going up, exports of fertilizer, and that's what Nutrien makes, mainly fertilizer. But they make a certain type of fertilizer that I think is less attractive, okay? So that's my issue, is that they make what are called, I remember exactly the name of NTR's nutrients, fertilizers. They are, potash. It was a merger between potash and agrium. Okay. And so their type of fertilizer is not really my favorite. Within the industry, I like a different type of fertilizer, a nitrogen-based fertilizer. And those are the ones that we tend to like to hold. Would you think that there's better profitability with those type of names? So I don't hate the company. I don't hate this exposure to the fertilizer space. I just think there are better opportunities within this sector. So I would go with a nitrogen-based fertilizer company that can take advantage of low-cost natural gas as feedstock. Remember, 50% of nitrogen-based fertilizer is input is a natural gas. And so A lot of the companies that are benefiting from low natural gas prices are those fertilizer makers here in the United States that can effectively export. They're exporting natural gas, right? They're not LNG, but through nitrogen fertilizer, they're the ones that are doing the best. So I would be looking for those others within the space. Thanks for the call. And let's grab another caller question right now.
This is Alan calling from Hayward, California. I just wanted to know if you think Lakeland Industries is a good investment. Would you consider it a growth or value stock, and why? They produce protective work gear for firefighters, electricians, etc. Yeah, just want to know what you think. That's Larry, Apple, Kelly, Edward. Thank you. Bye.
All right, looking at Lakeland, L-A-K-E is the symbol. And this is a company that did very well during the pandemic because they make protective equipment. And, you know, everyone was buying these crazy suits and worried about the pandemic. And obviously that was a bit overblown, but still their products are in high demand. And this its customers include integrated oil, chemical and petrochemical companies, utilities, automobile companies, steel producers, glass and construction companies, smelting, etc. So they make a lot of lab equipment, fire protection equipment, industrial protective mark clothing, etc. And once again, they made a ton of money, $4.34 in 2021, but that was an anomaly. They don't want to look at that. But the good thing here is that earnings are accelerating. They earned 48 cents in 2023, 72 last year, 89 cents expected this year, and $1.83 expected next year. So that's pretty nice. And I think the chart has pulled back recently, but it pulled back into support around this 200-day moving average. So I think it's a pretty easy trade. If it breaks below 18, you sell it. It's at 20 and change now, so you have about a 10% risk here. What I like about it overall is that acceleration in growth, but also the fact that they have a very clean balance sheet, pretty much no debt. And now it's not exceedingly profitable. Return on equity now is only about 2%. But if earnings do accelerate till next year, I think that that's going to boost those profitability numbers pretty fast. So, you know, I don't hate it. It's obviously a very, very risky play. And in that instance, I would call it a growth name because you're really banking on that growth of earnings next year and revenue accelerating by 40% expected in the third quarter and 46% in the fourth quarter. So, you know, that's certainly a lot of expectations. And so it's either going to meet those and probably, you know, head back into the high 20s, or it's going to miss those expectations and then head back into the mid to low teens. And so there's certainly a high level of risk here. Depends on how much risk you want to take. Thanks for the call. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, and that's help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART.
Justin Klein is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I've heard you say multiple times that you prefer shorter duration treasury bonds. Can you explain to me why it is more advisable?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. InvestTalk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch InvestTalk on our YouTube channel.
Let's talk a bit about gold. Gold continues to power to new all-time highs, and sentiment in markets is increasingly bullish, which is kind of at odds. Historically, gold is a safe haven. And it's usually when people have more trepidations about the overall markets, overall assets. And now it's kind of running together. And so is this what is really driving this? Is it both? Is it, hey, asset prices are going up simply because stimulus, monetary debasement, and ultimately there's enough people out there that are trying to guard against bad outcomes of the election, for example? or just geopolitically, right, with wars in the Middle East and Eastern Europe. I think that's probably the most likely explanation. Even though overall, gold prices are not really responding in a straightforward way to inflation or money printing. Inflation has been ebbing for the last 18 months to 2 years. But gold is just powered higher in the face of inflation going from, say, 9% to 3%. And what it tells you is that the Fed or the gold is sniffing out a more dovish Fed as inflation ebbs. And the normal relationship between gold and interest rates is broken down as well. Usually when real rates are positive, that is bad for gold. And the Fed raised rates to 5%. Inflation went to 3%. That's 2% real inflation rate. That's positive. That's usually bad for gold. Not this time. And usually a strong dollar is also bad for gold. That's not happening either. And so who's buying all this gold? Now, the first candidate would be central banks. And they did increase significantly their holdings of gold in 2022 and 23. But overall central bank demand so far this year was not as strong. But still healthy. So I don't want to say that's not a factor. Somewhat it is. What's even more interesting, though, is that domestic ETFs that track gold are not really getting inflows. In fact, holdings of gold ETFs are still lower than they were this time last year. So really, the demand is coming from China and India. Now, the jewelry demand is not up, mainly because the Chinese economy has slowed. But a lot of Chinese consumers are buying gold in lieu of real estate or stocks. And so what this move is telling us is that gold is becoming a slightly different type of asset. That's sniffing out the monetary debasement that's happening all around the world. You know, when you look at the dollar or any other currency, you're usually looking at it in relation to other currencies. But if all currencies are being debased, how do you track that level of debasement? Very simple. Gold. It's the asset that cannot be debased. And that's why it continues to head higher. So that's really what it's telling you, is that we are in a period of global debasement of assets and of currencies, and the ultimate currency, which is gold. And so a lot of wealthy investors are deciding when they have too much cash on their balance sheet, yes, they're putting it in equities. Yes, they're taking risks in bond markets and such, but more and more are recognizing the situation for what it is, that the global economy is too much debt, and the only way out is debasement, and the only release valve here is gold, and that's why it continues to power to all time. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And remember, we can help you better understand your portfolio dynamics by calculating your investor risk number by heading over to investtalk.com, click on the portfolio review button and filling that out. This service is free and it is confidential. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.